This year, Parshas Lech Lecha, Tavshin Samach Zayin, is dedicated to today the Yartzeit of Rachel Imenu and Rav Yechezkel ben Chanoch HaLevi. Okay, the object of this year today is to try to answer a very basic question, which is, who was Avraham? We do not hear of anything in the text. Okay, we know of the Medrash of the Kivshan Ha'esh, but we don't hear much in the text at all about why he deserved to be chosen by Hashem for this great mission, for this great status, for these promises. And so we want to read between the lines and focus on the hints that the Torah gives us as it tries to define for us the greatness of Avraham. But we also have to understand that the events in Parshas Lech Lecha span about 25 years. We know that at the end of the Parsha is when he has the command of the Bris Mila, and he is told that he will have a son from Sarah, and we know he was 99. Lech Lecha, he was either 70 or 75, so we're talking about a good 30 or 25 years in the course of this Parsha. Now, Avraham himself, as you see, evolves in a ruchnius type of a way, in his own understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look, his name goes from Avram to Avraham. That shows a distinction, a change in his abilities, his spiritual kohos, the depth of his connection to Hashem. You see that Hashem appears to Avram in different names, indicating different levels of relationship. We see that Avram refers to Hashem in different ways, indicating his deepening and deepening a bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So not only do we want to know who he was to deserve this, but how he evolved. And we're not just going to speak about Avraham, we have to talk about Sarah. We don't really hear much about her, and her name is not changed until after the Hagar story. And we'll focus on that a little bit and see who she is and her achievements. And don't forget, the Torah never writes in essay form. The Torah doesn't say, and so from here we learn that Avraham, and you know, it's all Ramazim hints. Now, the first hint that we're going to find is right in the very beginning of Lech Lecha. Focus carefully on who it is that speaks to Avraham, the name of Hashem, and with what terminology does Hashem appear to Avraham. So notice this. Vayomer Hashem el Avraham. Okay, Hashem told Avraham, Lech Lecha. Now, he promised him some great things. In Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel, look at Pasuk Dalet. What do you notice? Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem. Which word is introduced here? Which new word is introduced? Diber. This is a very critical observation. Now, the rule is the following, across the board. Ba'asara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam. Hashem created the world with the concept of amira. Amira, Chazal explained to us, you might have heard this before, is a soft way of speaking. Lashon raka. Now what does that mean? Hashem whispered versus shouting. When we say Hashem spoke softly as opposed to speaking strongly or forcefully, we mean that Hashem called things into being, like the world, the Bria, the natural world, but did not make demands on the world. Now, be careful with this statement. In other words, Hashem called the world into being, Vayomer Hashem Yehi Ar. All the Vayomers to human beings throughout the entire Sefer Bereishis. It's only Vayomer except one case, which we will speak about. Which means Hashem called things into being. Hashem sustained the world. Hashem maintained existence, but never really demanded a certain level of achievement from human beings. Now, there were always, we've said this, always six mitzvos. From the very moment Adam and Chava were created, there were six mitzvos. They're called the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach because Noach added the seventh, which is Eiver Min Achai. Right? This sounds familiar? The six that were in existence is to know Hashem, right? Not to serve idols, to set up court systems, no killing, no stealing, and no adultery. A just society, a moral society, and an understanding of Hashem. Okay, no nature worship or image worship. This always existed. And we see, and we spoke about this last week, that there was a Mabul. In fact, there were two Mabuls. There was one in Enosh's time that covered only a third of the world, and then there was the huge Mabul in Noah's time. So Hashem was not a free-for-all. But at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never came down, as we spoke about, and called humanity together and said, this is what I expect from you. And he certainly never made demands of Ben Adam L'Makom from the people. In fact, when he destroyed the world, it was on Ben Adam L'Chaveru. It was on the lack of chesed, because Olam Chesed Yibaneh, and here there was a complete breakdown in chesed, there was gezela, right? Everyone was taking from each other, no sense of responsibility one for the next. Now, there were also Oved Avodah Zarah, but that's not why Hashem destroyed the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was patient, and Hashem waited, but never made it clear, never called the humanity together, never made a great statement, did not convene a Har Sinai. It's Vayomer. He gave and gave and gave and gave, and gave without really demanding. However, Vayedaber, that's demanding. Now, we know there's a transition from Be'asara Ma'amarot Nivra HaOlam, 10 statements, softly, so to speak, spoken. And then, what are the Dibrot? Aseret HaDibrot. There was a great transition. By the time you have the Jewish people, you have expectations, you have demands, you have Schar Va'onesh. It's all very clearly delineated. Im b'chukotai teilechu, if you go according to my rules, this is the outcome. If not, this is the outcome. By the way, what transition between the 10 Ma'amarot and the 10 Dibrot? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just shock the world and institute a change without kind of orienting the world to this change. In between were the 10 Makot. And the 10 Makot taught the world no more free lunch. Either you do what Hashem says or there's ramifications. So Dibur begins to show itself in Shemos by Moshe, by Hashem telling Moshe to speak to Paro and the Makos, and of course by the Aseret HaDibros, it's all Vayadaber. Vayadaber, Vayadaber, Vayadaber. The only Dibur in Bereshis, you'll never guess it, is by Noach, Vayadaber Hashem el Noach Tse Min HaTeva. Which means that Hashem said to Noah, I expect something back from you. I'm starting the world again from you, but it's not a free-for-all. I expect some compliance. Look what I just did. And what is the first thing Noah does, therefore? Builds a mizbeach and offers karbanos. It's a response to Dibur. Now, who is Avraham? Hashem, Bayomer Hashem el Avram. Lech lecha. Hashem asked Avraham to go on, gave him great promises. In other words, he began to initiate Avraham into his great mission of being probably the most important person that ever lived, above and beyond Moshe Rabbeinu, because there would be no Moshe Rabbeinu without what Avraham did. He changed the entire world. All the religions are based on Avraham, even the Eastern religions. We mentioned that Avraham, after Yitzchak died, gave his other children, the Pasuk says, Matanot, gifts, Veishalchem, Kedmal, Eretz Kedem, the Eastern world, sent them east. Rashi says, Shem Tuma. And we explain that the Mefarshim on Rashi, the super commentaries on Rashi, explain Rashi. Of course, he didn't give them the name of Tuma. He would never do such a thing, but he gave them the name of Hashem and permission to utilize it in a state of Tuma, without mitzvot, without Tzchar Va'onesh, etc. So much of the world's religions come from Avraham. He was the most important social, philosophical, religious changer of the world, initiated the greatest changes ever. And Hashem wants him to begin this mission, but he speaks in the Lashon of Amira. He didn't demand it. Remember what we said last week. The whole Eilah told us Hashem is waiting and waiting for someone to take this upon themselves. Remember Avram sees the building on fire, Bira Doleket, and he says, isn't there a manhig? That's the world full of chaotic, you know, complete unraveling with all kinds of lifestyles and forms of worship that have nothing to do with the truth. And the Baal Habira looks out and says, I'm the Baal Habira, I'm the owner of this mansion, of this palace, but I'm not putting out the fire. You put out the fire, right? That was my little twist on it. But, and that was really how Avram saw himself. He was going to put out the fire. And Hashem never demanded Avram to take this mission upon himself. He never demanded Avram to stand firm against Nimrod and allow himself to be thrown in the Kivshan Aish. This is all grassroots. And Avram did that before Hashem ever even spoke to him. to give him confirmation that he was on the right path, to assure him that he'll be protected. So look at this pasuk. Vayomer Hashem al Avraham. Hashem says to Avraham, but never made an absolute demand, lech lecha. And then how does Avraham hear that? Vayelech Avraham kasher diber elav Hashem. To Avraham, this expectation that Hashem had, because he was of such great talent and potential, Hashem expected, hoped for something from him. When he recognized who he was and his abilities, to him that was a demand, as if Hashem was medaber, dibor, that Hashem demanded it from him and expected it from him, because this was all from his own awareness. I'm sure that everyone here has had this experience, where they feel a compelling need within themselves to reach a certain level, to do a certain thing correctly. Not because anyone outside is demanding, but it comes from a sense that we hear the Amira as a Dibor. Now, notice something in Unkelus. Across the board, this is the rule. Every time it says, Vayomer Hashem, Unkelus translates it, Va'amar Hashem Le, either it's Moshe, whoever it is, here La Avram, Hashem said to Avraham. Every time the Torah says Vayidiber or Vayidaber, Unkelus says, Mi Malil Im. Not Amar La, that he said to, but Malil Im, he spoke with. With indicates a much greater closeness, and the word Malil reminds us, way back in Bereishis, when it says, Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, he blew into his nose in a shama, Unkelus says there, Ruach mimalala, an ability to speak. Abstract ideas converted into words, able to communicate from one person to the next. That's godly. That's the Nishmat Chaim. Here, he's making reference to that. He spoke, this is a neshama, an awareness of the neshama, with Avram and not to Avraham. So Diber is more demanding, but it indicates a greater closeness, a greater bond, more of a connection between the speaker and the one spoken to. So from this little switch in the pasuk, that Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem, we know that Avraham internalized the ideas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they worked on him, and he felt the personal need and the personal call to act upon them. And yet at the same time, Avram's awareness of Hashem, it seems, up until this point, is the name Hashem, which is Yud Ke Vav Ke, Haya, Hove, Veyia, was, is, and will ever be. The world at large was aware, many societies were worshipping nature, they were aware that there was a Kel Elyon, a great supreme God. Of course, you know that they just assumed that he had given out his, he had divided, what's the word, he had assigned or delegated certain responsibilities to powers of nature, and so they would deal with them directly and not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, let's stop here for a second. Remember we gave the mashal last week about the mistake of Avodah Zarah? You walk into a jewelry store, and there's a beautiful necklace and it costs $10,000. So you say to the clerk, look, I don't have $10,000. It's too much of a sacrifice. So give me the necklace for $5,000 and I'll give you $1,000. You relate to the clerk, giving the clerk a gift, because the clerk is in direct connection with the goods that you need. This is the core of Avodah Zarah. The sun has the heat and the warmth. You need it. You give the sun a gift. It's a little bit difficult to relate to the owner of the sun who is not there. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu then says to us in the Aseres Hadibros, right? Lo yelcha Elohim acherim al panai. Lifanai. When I'm right there, how could you relate to the clerk? When the owner is standing right next to the clerk. It's al-panai. How could you make special arrangements with the intermediary right in front of me? So this is the awareness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to have, that Hashem is not so distant that it would be an excusable mistake to make arrangements with the clerk, so to speak, with the intermediary. In any case, people knew that there was Kel Elyon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Avram as Yud, Ke, Vav, Ke, past, present, future, all powerful. And under that awareness, he went into the Kivshan HaEsh back in or costume and was willing to give up his life for what he knew was to be true. And the truth of Hashem's omnipotence, all-powerfulness, and total existence forever was what motivated him to hear this call. However, although he heard this call and he followed this message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we see that much of his growth is still very much in his own hands. In fact, one of the explanations of Lech Lecha that the Ar Gedal Yoho brings is, go Lecha and you'll be, in a sense, on your own. You're going now to, you're climbing a huge hill, a huge mountain. You have a whole world to re-educate. And Lech Lecha, you are going to go, and I will recede a little bit, and it's in your hands. And every time a person faces a nisayon like this, they do feel that it's really in their hands. And any time a person is in a state of a great nisayon, the essence of that is that they feel that Hashem has retreated a little bit, and they have to contend with this. And right after Hashem makes this promise to Avram and sends him off and says, Lech Lecha, you see two episodes where Avram is on his own to figure it out the best way he can. And after those two episodes, Hashem appears to him. And after Hashem appears to him and makes more promises and comforts Avram in a certain way and gives him some security about the future, then he leaves him alone and he's on his own again for another ordeal. Then Hashem comes back and appears to him, gives him more promises and leaves him alone, and he's on another ordeal. So let's view this pattern. We know the stories in Parshas Lech Lecha goes like this. First is Lech Lecha, gives him the promises, gives him the indication that he has things to contend with, which he will have to use his understanding, his brains, his best abilities. And immediately after this, we see that he has two stories to deal with. The story of the famine, which sends him down to Mitzrayim, and the whole situation with Sarah. And then Lot separating from him. Now don't forget, Hashem had just promised Avraham that he will have descendants and he will be a great nation and his children will inherit this land and Hashem will give his children this land. And immediately what happens? Number one, there's a famine in this land. It's not what Hashem promises in this beautiful land, and the land can't even sustain people. And he has to go down to Mitzrayim. And in Mitzrayim, Sarah is taken. So the fear is that if there is an offspring, people will confuse it. Whose child is it? Is it Avraham's? Which is exactly what happened, by the way, later on with Yishmael, when people said, oh, you know, it came from, the king. Remember right after the story with the king of Gerar, Hashem pakad Sarah, and they said, no, she didn't really give birth to him. I mean, she didn't really, it wasn't necessarily from Avraham, so Hashem made Yitzchak look exactly like Avraham. Not only that is his lineage in question now, because Sarah was taken by Avimelech, the king of Mitzrayim, but more than that, his closest of kin, his brother Haran's son Lot, who had stayed with him, who was like-minded in his understanding of Hashem, doesn't want to stay with him anymore. He separates. So Avram is given a promise for the land and for children, and right away he has to contend with two threats to his future. Okay? And he's on his own. Hashem does not speak or interfere with these stories. Avraham works it out to the best of his ability, using his chachmah, using his understanding. And he tells Sarah to pretend she's the sister. And he tells Lot he better go, that they have too much of a difference of seeing things. And he's on his own. Now, I'm sure each of these challenges for Avraham took a lot of thought and soul-searching of what to do and how to do it right, and he is really left on his own to contend with them. And afterwards, Hashem appears to him. Now, there is a muktam u'muchar b'Torah situation here where the Tosfos explains that the Bris ben Absarim, which is reported after the war of the four kings and the five kings, really happened here, okay, for many reasons. I want you to look at the story of the Bris ben Hapsarim, which is in the Bris ben Hapsarim, which is in where is it? What page? 66. Page 66. Okay. Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Elav, he said to him, and there's a little indication that you stop there, which could indicate that Vayomer Elav, that this already happened. There's certain symbols that this happened. We're not going to go into the Ein Mukta Mucha right now, but it fits very well with the pattern of the Parsha, that this happened earlier. Vayomer Elav, he says to him, Ani Hashem Asher Hotzeicha Mi'or Kasdim. I am Hashem who took you out of Or Kasdim to give you this land to inherit. Now, we have to notice a few things. Firstly, if this really happened after the War of the Four Kings and the Five Kings, then it seems a little difficult that after such a long, you know, so many situations and events already in his life, he goes back and reminds him that he took him out of Or Kasdim. However, if this is the next revelation after Lech Lecha, and between Lech Lecha and these two challenges of Mitzrayim and Lo leaving him, and this is the next time that Hashem appears to him, it makes more sense that he says to him, I am Hashem who took you out of Or Kasdim, I promised you this land, so far you're doing well. Otherwise, you have to say that this prophecy comes after the one before it, which Hashem says, I'm going to give you great reward, and you have a huge schar, and he takes him out and shows him, you know, the stars, and then he says, I'm Hashem who took you out of Or Kasdim. So saying that the Bris Ben Absarim happens as the next revelation after his two challenges also explains that. So now, how does Hashem refer to himself? Look in Pasuk Zion. You're missing a little word. Vayomer Elav, he says to Avram, Ani Hashem. That Ani is brand new. I Hashem. How does Avram respond to this new revelation, this nuance now in what Hashem is teaching Avram? He calls Hashem what? Vayomar Ado, he calls Hashem Ado, my master Hashem. And then he asks, how will I know that I will really inherit the land? Hashem introduces himself to Avram after these two challenges as Ani Hashem. And Avram responds, Ado, my master, Hashem, how will I know that I will always merit this land? The Ani is another level in Avraham's recognition of the relationship between Hashem and the world. Up till now, we have Kel, Elyon, Melech, Yudkei, Vavkei. This is how Hashem appears to Avram. Master of all things. Controller of all things, all forces in the world. Past, present, and future, no one else. Avram hears the importance of that, that speaks to him directly, and he acts on it. That's the Dibur. He feels a connection. But this is not the same as Ani Hashem. Ani Hashem already indicates what?
He reveals himself.
Personal. It's the concept of Anochi, Ani, it's concept of Hashgacha Pratis, involvement in every single aspect of your life, Ani. There's a very great similarity between Ani and Adoni. One is just missing the Dalet. And we will talk about that in a moment. It's a very important application. When Hashem says Ani, I am Hashem, and Avram responds and says, my master, Hashem, the difference between Melech and my master is very great. Melech is the great king with the crown and the chariot and the horses and the whole thing, riding down the street and everybody comes out to watch. My master is the guy, the servant who works for the kings, who puts on his shoes and brings him his clothes and is in personal contact with the king. It indicates an individual relationship, but there's much more to it. The first step in recognizing Hashem is that which you observe from the outside world, nature, the argument for design, the arguments that a basically logical person who has not been corrupted looks around and realizes there must be a master. It's just self-evident. That's one way. That's becoming to the recognition of Hashem from that which is outside of a person. But then there is a deeper, a more profound, and much more personal way of coming to recognition of Hashem from the neshama that exists within each and every individual person. The fact that Hashem is part and parcel, so to speak, of my very existence and my psyche and my emotions. Look, if you broke down a human being into all the various chemicals that make us up, all our molecules, we're just made up of a bunch of chemicals. If you put them all in test tubes and broke them down, you'd have a series of test tubes, and the amount of chemicals you could reduce a human being to would probably sell for $5 or $10. And they're the same chemicals you find in nature. They happen to be organized into a human being. Well, there are other creatures that have the very same chemicals organized into different forms. There are many things in existence that are made up of complex parts, millions of complex parts that work together, such as a computer. But the human being is the only creature that looks in the mirror, so to speak, or looks at themselves and says, I. What does the word I mean? It's the most astonishing word in the whole language. I. Who is I? I means not you. The ability to perceive anything as relative. The animals do not know the difference between I and you. In other words, if you hold a mirror before a monkey, and that's the smartest of the animals, it seems to, among the smartest, it seems not there. Scientists are not quite sure that it knows it's seeing itself and not some other animal. It's not so necessarily aware that it's itself. When we say I, we mean that we understand that we are distinct from you, and once we understand that there is a relative difference between you and me, then we begin to make comparisons. Once we make comparisons, we either become very satisfied or very dissatisfied. There is no creature on earth that is dissatisfied. There is no elephant that is dissatisfied with its status. I'm sick of being an elephant, and I'm dissatisfied. Because if you're dissatisfied, you improve. And the animals have been doing the same thing they've been doing for hundreds, and you want to go into Shatius Mebraeus, millions of years. They just do the same thing all the time. They do not have an awareness, a relative ability to compare themselves. Rav Amiel explains that the very experience of feeling dissatisfied proves to a person from within themselves that there is an neshama and there is God. Why are we dissatisfied? We're dissatisfied that we cannot live as long as we want to or live forever. Now, there's no one who lived forever. There's no one that ever existed that lived forever. So why are we dissatisfied that we can't achieve a particular goal that doesn't exist? Why are we dissatisfied that we don't know everything or that we can't control everything? We are dissatisfied because we are comparing ourselves to Hashem, who exists forever and who knows everything and is all-controlling and all-powerful. And compared to that, I'm limited and I'm dissatisfied with my limitations. The very notion of being dissatisfied comes from the ability to say, I. Now, you scientists can pull apart your whole body and all the gray matter in your brain, and they don't know where that self-awareness lives. Which molecule makes you have self-awareness? Which combination of chemicals? It's the neshama. When Hashem says, Ani Hashem, Avraham is coming beyond the recognition of the great power out there, who is true and real, but that within myself, an awareness that I am part and parcel of that very power, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Now, I don't want to say that there's a piece of Hashem in a person. That's a very tricky statement because we are not Hashem, obviously. But the neshama is more of the nature of God than it is of the nature of the animals, obviously. It comes from a different world. It doesn't come from the physical world. And that's what connects us and allows us to say I, and allows us also to be very satisfied. Right? Survival of the fittest would indicate, which is the only alternative to God's creation, that if you give away your time, your energy, your money, your physical, you know, your physical strength to someone else, you would be less capable of surviving, so that's bad. And you would feel diminished. But when we do great chesed like that, giving away all those things, we feel satisfied and full. When a person just listens to those experiences, they understand that from within themselves, their Hashem is speaking to them and explaining to them that there is an Hashem, where they would never have these feelings. They would never know the concept of dissatisfaction or satisfaction when they give away and make themselves less capable of surviving. And so here Hashem says, more than just the king of the whole world, your personal God, you just went through two nisyonos. You did them on your own. You dealt with them as best as you can. Now I'm coming in the Bris Ben Habsarim to tell you that I am personally involved with you, and you are an extension of, in a sense, the powers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are linked, and this is before the Bris Milah, but this is still the first Bris. The bris ben Absar, Hashem makes an agreement, a bris with Avraham. A bris is an appropriate response to a bond between a man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a person and Hashem, which is a bond based on the ani, the Hashem within the person. Because a bris is not like a regular contract. A regular contract is like this. I have goods, and I need to sell them. So I'm selling, I promise to sell them to you. You need to buy the goods. You promise to buy them from me. Now, I really don't care about you, and you don't care about me, but it works for both of us. And if I sell you the goods, and you pay for them, and then they drew the ship that they're being transported on sings, I really don't care. And if you promise to buy the goods from me, but I can't produce, so you'll buy them from someone else. We don't really have a bond. We're just in it because it makes sense. We're serving our own needs. It's not a bris. A bris is clearly when both sides are after the very same goal together. Right? The both sides, now we have the ultimate bris is, and we've spoken about this, Shema Yisrael, which is our side, remember, of what? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, is our side of the great bris of Sinai. Right? Hashem Anochi Hashem Elokecha, we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu. Lo Yelech Elohim Acherim, we say Hashem Echad. Right? Two sides of the great bris. But we're both saying the same thing. So when Hashem makes a bris with Avram, it's a fitting experience, a fitting development, you might say, after Avram understands that that Hashem is Adon, my personal master that I'm involved with on a moment-by-moment basis that exists and speaks through me. And so this is the next Madrega, and of course with this comes Hashgacha Pratis. Of this comes with Hashem's ability to interfere in the individual circumstances of everybody's life. With this comes the concept that everything is thought out and is for a purpose. With this comes the concept of everything is for chesed, even if we don't understand it. Now, all of these ideas that we are used to hearing, these come to Avraham as the next level in development of his relationship with Hashem. And he calls Hashem Adoni for the first time. Adoni Hashem, my master Hashem. However, what are the next words? What are the next words? Bame Eda. How will I know that, that I will certainly inherit this land? How do I know, he asks Hashem, that the promises you made will always be valid and something won't come in along the way? Now this, how will I know, is considered a shortcoming. It's considered a shortcoming because he still doesn't have absolute emun in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he doesn't have to question the promises. Okay? If we understand that the Tosfos says that this is a mukta mamuchar and this happened before the war of the five kings and the four kings, then we realize that after that war, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him in the psukim directly before these psukim we just read. And then that is where he says, you have a great, great reward. And Avram says, what will you give me? And Hashem shows him the stars. And in Pasuk Vav it says, and he trusted Hashem, and Hashem considered it an act of charity. He trusted Hashem. So according to Tosos, this happened after. First we have the bris ben Absarim, where Hashem reveals to him about the future of the nation and the Gullus and the Geula, and he tells him that he's a personal God and he will go into Gullus. All the implications go into Gullus with them and come out with them and stay with them. And that revelation is a response to Avram saying, how will I know? Bame'eda, show me a sign, give me a proof. After this bris that Hashem makes with Avram, then we have the war with the four kings and the five kings, where Avraham fights this war, comes out victorious, sees Hashem's hand in every single move that he made. And then Hashem appears to him in these psukim right before the ones we just read, and he says, you have a great reward. And Hashem said, who will inherit? Avram asks, who will inherit me? He says, you will have a child, be like the stars. And Avram trusted Hashem. So we put the trusting Hashem as an episode after the one where he questioned and asked for a sign. So again, and my grandfather of Schwab points this out here in the Sefer, that this was the next degree of development in Avram's recognition, closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so you see here also that he's calling Hashem my personal master. He understands Hashem's involvement in the moment-by-moment aspects of his life and his existence as an extension, so to speak, of whatever is the Ritzon Hashem. And yet trusting the promises is still another Madriga. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the ancestors, made promises that he did not keep. He made promises that they would be a great nation. By the time Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov died, they were not a great nation. They were a small family. He made promises that they would inherit this land, and when Avram certainly didn't inherit the land, and neither did his children, and neither did Yaakov or the Shvatim. One of the hints to Tchiyas HaMesim from the Torah is in what we quote in Shema, which is Leman Yirbu Yemechem Yemei B'neichem Al-Damasher Nishba Hashem L'Aveseichem L'Seis Lahem. Hashem promised your ancestors to give it to them. He never gave it to them. That's a hint at Tchiyas HaMesim, that they will have Tchiyas HaMesim, and then Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and the Imos will inherit the land. So here, Hashem is making promises, and Avraham develops to a point where he can accept the promises of Hashem and trust Hashem while the promises are far from being fulfilled. So after the war of the four kings and the five kings, Hashem appears to Avraham. Now go back to the top of 66. And he says, Al tira Avram, do not be afraid, Avram. I am protecting you. And he calls himself Mogain. This is another Madrega. Tells him, your reward is very great. Avram, as we said, asks, who will inherit me? He says, you will have a child. Shows him the stars. And Pasuk Vav, Vehemin Bahashem, he trusted Hashem. And Hashem considered it an act of charity, that he trusted the promises that Hashem would fulfill before they were fulfilled. Now we have to stop and talk about a few things. Number one, Hashem called himself Mogain. Earlier, by the Bris Ben Habsarim, he said Ani. He introduced himself as your personal God. Now he's introducing something else. Mogain, your protector and your shield. Not only am I involved with you, but in all the challenges that you face on your own, so to speak, lech lecha, when I'm not speaking with you, because we see that there's challenges and then there's a revelation. There's challenges and there's a revelation. There's challenges and there's a revelation. In those times where you have to figure it out on your own, I will always make sure that you do not harm yourself, make terrible mistakes. I will protect you. I will preserve you. I will be your mugging, your shield. And this is the origin of Mogain Avraham. Mogain Avraham. So now, Hashem has already said, we know Hashem is Melech Kel Elyon. We know for Avraham, Hashem not only is Melech Kel Elyon, but he expresses that as a personal call to action. We know then that HaKadosh Baruch Hu develops this and tells him, Ani, and Hashem calls Avraham Adoni, my master. Now Hashem tells him, Mogain. And now Avraham trusts in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has Emuna. The concept of Emuna, the Shoresh is Omein. We've spoken about this. And Omein is the nursing mother, and the suckling child is the Yonik. Now the experience of that little baby in the mother's arms, where it has no worries in the world, it's totally, everything it needs is being taken care of, it's protected, it's a state in a certain state of bliss, completely content. That is the feeling of emuna. To trust absolutely that everything is in order. Now, a child doesn't know of the dangers out there. We have a much more difficult situation than having emuna because we know there are many dangers and many pitfalls. And to trust blissfully is a huge madriga. Emuna is in a certain sense, a logical conclusion. Okay? A logical conclusion that since I know Hashem exists and Hashem controls everything and Hashem is involved in my life and Hashem is a Baal Chesed and Hashem can do everything that He wants, since I know that, that's not a leap of faith, that I know, then I trust that these particular situations that I don't understand also make sense, and I trust that the promises that Hashem made that haven't been fulfilled will be fulfilled. In other words, we have to be very clear to distinguish between knowledge and trust. Har Sinai was to establish knowledge of Hashem. Ata Hares Aladas. You know it, you saw it, so you know it. Now, when you know certain basic truths, it's like having a puzzle and having most of the pieces, but three or four pieces are missing. So you can kind of get an impression what they must be, and you know they must be out there, but you don't have them yet. So when you know that Hashem exists, like Avram, Melech, and personal, and protector, so if there are promises or if there are hardships that I don't quite understand, I trust that those have a place and make sense, and I can, and Hashem will bring everything to its, to where it's meant to be, and I will not be lost in the process. That's where trust comes in. Trust in the midos of Hashem, how Hashem conducts the world, that it makes sense. Trust in the future, in Tchias HaMesim and Mashiach. But not trust that there's a God. That's das, that's knowledge. So here when Avram trusts Hashem, it's considered an act of charity. And it's a greater act of charity for Avraham to trust Hashem than it is for us. Because we are coming at a late point in history where Hashem has kept a lot of promises and done a lot of things and done huge miracles. So for us, it's not a huge hurdle to trust Hashem that the other promises will come true too. We already split the sea and all the things that we know about, right? But for Avraham so far, he had limited experience with Hashem. He had limited experience with Hashem. Hashem had promised him children, so far there were no children. He had promised him a land, so far there was no land. Okay? He had promised him a great nation, it hadn't started yet. And yet he trusted in Hashem's promises. That was an act of charity, almost like a gift that Avram is giving. And after Avram trusted in Hashem, then he's again left on his own. The next episode is Sarah and Hagar. And you see that they had to figure it out on their own because Avram said to Sarah, do whatever you think is right in your eyes. Right? Do what you think is right. And Sarah did what she thought was right. And you can argue that that it didn't work out as they planned and they regretted that they ever did this. It's possible. You can argue that it was all built into the system and it had to happen and this had to evolve this way. Also possible. But we see that Hashem didn't tell them what to do except when Avram was very, very, very resistant to kicking out Yishmael. And Hashem said, you have to listen to Sarah, which probably, this is my own understanding, this is probably the fulfillment of I am your mugging, I am your shield. In other words, I won't let you make the worst decision and do the wrong thing. I will always protect you, because he didn't want to send out Yishmael. And Hashem had to tell him, you must listen to her. If you don't send him out, you're in for a huge disaster. So he protected Avram from that mistake. Now, Sarah here, I just want to point out something very interesting that I heard from David Foreman. Sarah, after this episode, Avram's name is changed to Avraham, and Sarai's name is changed to Sarah. Okay, and Sarah does something very exceptional here. She decides that she has no children, Perek Tesvav 70. Hashem is not telling them what to do. And this is the pattern of real life. We're all very much left to our own devices, and yet we have assurances along the way that that we will reach our goal, that we will not veer way off track from our destiny. And yet along the way, how we get there is very much in our hands. So Sarai did not have children. But she knew of the promises to Avraham that he would be a great nation and they would inherit the land. And she's decided that, well, maybe it's just not going to come from me. But why should I hold him back from having the fulfillment of his promises? So in order that Avraham should have a future, she was willing to sacrifice and let him have a child from Hagar so that things would move forward as Hashem had promised. So she said, look, Hashem hasn't given me children, so go marry Hagar. And she hoped that this child, she would raise it, obviously. And Avraham did this. Now look at the next pasuk. Vatikach, let's look at the verbs. Look at the verbs. Vatikach Sarai, she took, the wife of Avraham. She took Hagar the Mitzris, her maid, after 10 years of living in Eretz Canaan, next verb, Vatitain, and she gave her to Avram, her husband, as an Isha, as a wife. Vatikach, Vatitain, Laisha. She took and she gave it to her husband. Okay? There's only one other case in the early story of Bereshis where a wife took something and gave it to her husband. Chava. David Foreman pointed this out, that we know that the Mahos were, their role was to be mitakein, to fix the chet of Chava. By the way, the Avot had a different role. They were in charge of dimoy yotzer liyotzer, which means bringing a recognition to the world of how the creation is similar to the creator. So Avram was chesed, you know the three. They show different character, different, so to speak, midot of Hashem, and how that is expressed in the world and how the human beings model that. That's the job of the men, of the Avot. But the Imahot were in charge of being metakin the chet of Chava, which was to create confusion in the world and entangle tov and ra in emet and sheker, right? Before the Eitz Hadas, there was only emet and sheker, which means either it was true or it was false, and there was no confusion about it. It was a world of clarity, a world of truth. The Eitz Hadas, tov and ra, introduced good and bad, which, as you know, is subjective. So something can be true, and yet we think it's bad, because we don't like it, it doesn't appeal to us, it doesn't make sense, it's not politically correct, whatever, but it's MS from Hashem's perspective. Or something could be sheker from God's perspective, and we think it's very appealing, it's tov. They introduced, and I'm sure you've heard this idea, they introduced subjective decision, subjective perspective into the absolute, you know, categories of true and false. That's what Chava did, entangling, and that's why we became so confused. And the Imahot started the process of disentangling and isolating emet and sheker, and not getting confused with what we feel it is, the subjective opinion, is it good or is it bad, do I like it or not. So here we see that Sarai begins the process of doing this tikkun. Chava had given, when she did this sin, she realized, and the Midrashim say here, she realized now that she might be punished and she might die, and she didn't want Adam to go on without her. This is what the Medrash says. Sarah realizes that Avraham would maybe die childless and never be able to live up to the promises that Hashem hoped for him. So she wanted her husband to progress forward without her, if necessary, to his destiny. And so she reversed really what Chava did. She takes Hagar, Vatitain, and she gives Hagar to Avraham to move forward. But she hoped, I assume, didn't expect it to become so bitter, the situation. And then she realizes that eventually she has to separate Yitzchak and Yishmael. And this is, again, the disentangling of Emes and Sheker. And Avraham thought it was Ra. Vayera hadavar ma'od be'enei Avraham. He thought it was Ra, but Hashem said it's Emes. So she begins the process. Okay, so after this, where they figure this out, as we said, and Hashem comes then, and this is, after this, in this story comes the next revelation, when Avram is 99 and Sarai is 90, where they receive the Bris Milah, and with these, under these new conditions, with a husband who has a Bris Milah, who is in a personal relationship with Hashem, and it's evident now on his body, this is even the next level. If with this husband, Sarai has children, of course, with Yitzchak, and her name is changed to Sarai, and his name is changed to Avraham. Now, Sarai lost which letter? Yud, and gained which letter?
Hey.
Avraham gained which letter?
Hey.
Two hays make a yud. Okay, Rav Yeshua ben Korcha explains that the Yud of Sarai's name, which was the name of Hashem, Yud is always an indication of the name of Hashem, was divided, so to speak, in half. Half for her, Sarah, half for Avram, which became Avraham. That it was her, she's hidden in here, not all the stories are about her, but her achievements in Ruchnius would be that which would propel both of them further and may bring her into her ultimate destiny and Avraham into his ultimate destiny. Notice she did not bear a child from Avraham until he had a bris milah, until he reached a certain madrega in his closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the madrega was such that it was evident, as we said, on his body itself. That's the ultimate expression of Ani, Adoni, my master. So now we also go through these very same steps. First, it's incumbent upon a person to recognize Hashem as King of all things. Then to hear that should be so compelling that a person acts on it, although perhaps not demanded, moves further. With Nimishur said, then calling upon himself to grow when nobody's forcing him to grow. To develop. Then comes the hashgacha, the sense that Hashem is with me, the sense that Hashem is my mogein, my protector, emuna, which is trust in promises that haven't been fulfilled, and then, of course, we have the highest madrega, which is for Avraham, the bris milah, and the changing of the name, which indicates that they have really reached shlemus in this whole path of coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu now. Just want to tell you something very interesting. The Torah Tzmim, who's a modern-day commentator, Baruch Halevi Epstein, has a very intriguing understanding of a strange phrase in Pirkei Avos. Hillel says, "Im ein ani li mili, kishani la'atzmi mani. If I'm not for myself, who is for me? And when I am for myself, then what am I?" Hillel also said something else very strange. At the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, he said, "Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I'm here, everyone's here." So the Torah Tzmim explains that just like we write G-D, we don't write out Hashem's name ever, we drop some letters. That's how they did it also way back in the early days. Now what Hillel really said was, "Im ein Adoni," dropping the Dalid, "im ein Adoni li mili, ukeshani ekshani la'atmi," and that's the regular Ani. If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? That makes a lot of sense. If Hashem is not for me, who is for me? Right? "Im ein Adoni li mili, ukeshani la'atmi mani," and that's the regular Ani. He also said, "Im ani kan, hakol kan," which doesn't make much sense, and they go backwards trying to figure out what this really means, what he's hinting to. The Torah Tzmim says, "Im ado," right? If Hashem is here, hakol kan. So he says that be careful. He brings a few other examples also, by the way, that maybe we're just misreading the whole thing because we don't know the style of how they wrote, and they would, like we write G-D, they drop the Dalad. But the main point here is there is a very close connection between Adoni, well, I'm not pronouncing with the kamatz, my master, and Ani, the closeness. And we say this every single day in Adon Olam. And this is how we're going to end. Think about Adon Olam. The first half of Adon Olam expresses Hashem as master of the world. And let me make it clear, I didn't specifically say this. Avram was the first person to call Hashem Adon, master. This was a new innovation. Adon Olam, Asher Malach, Beterem Kol Yitzir Nivra, right? Hashem who ruled before everything was created, and after a while, and after everything is finished, Hashem will rule alone, and in between, for a short blip of time, we call Hashem Melech, and He is beginning, and He is the end, and there's no one to compare Him to, right? The whole beginning. Behu Echad Ve'ein Sheni, Laham Shilo, Laham Shil is from Mashal, no one to compare Him to. Laham Shilo, Lahach Bira, from Chaver, no colleague. Right, Laham Shilo Lach Beli Reishit, Beli Tachlit, Bahoa Loha Oz, Baham Misra. What are the next words? Vahu Keli, He's my personal God. Vachai Goali, Vitsur Chevli, Be'es Tzara, Vahu Nisi, He's my banner. Umanosli, my refuge. Right? So Avraham is introducing the concept that what is clear and evident for everybody, as Hashem is master of all, ultimately is translated into my personal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is what Avraham attempted through the course of his life to teach everybody, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved with humanity and personally involved with each person, and the person can come to know Hashem from shutting out all the noise and listening to their own neshama, which speaks to them, and and allows them to know that when they have awareness that I am I, the very word I, it must come from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's no other source for the word I. No one else has it, and that I has huge implications. And so a person finds Hashem from within themselves, and this is the other explanation of Lech Lecha. On the one hand, Lech Lecha is go, and you're kind of on your own. The other Lech Lecha, which is the other side of the coin, is Lech Lecha, go in deep into yourself and find there what tells you, what clearly proves to you that there is Hashem. And we always, there's an ebb and flow between the two. There are nisyonos where we feel like we're on our own and we have to make the best of it, but Hashem promises to be a mugging, that Hashem is with us. And then when we understand that, we feel that we're really not alone, because Hashem is speaking to us through our self-awareness, and also through kind of leading us and helping us not make wrong decisions, and guiding us. And so we move between the two, feeling on our own and feeling that we're very much an expression of Hashem's involvement and active existence within us. And so we see here, as we're just to sum up, that Avraham was, Hashem was searching and searching, as we said last week, and he finds Avraham. And yet Avraham, once he finds Avraham, it's still very much in Avraham's hands. And this is the case with every person. It's all very much in our hands, and yet we have the assurances. So wish everybody good luck in this undertaking, in this enterprise. And no, we said that the Adon, that's the dropping of the dalet. That they drop?
These are just a few short comments on the Lech Lecha Shir, a few observations. Number one, I'd like to make it clear that what Rabbi David Foreman observed was that the same verbs are used regarding Chava and regarding Sarah, Vatikach, Vatitain, and the word Laisha. The implications of that are not his necessarily. Also, there are two slight corrections. Of course, I meant to say Yitzchak and not Yishmol when we were discussing Sarah's... the question on who was her child, because of the episode with the various kings. And also, of course, I meant to say that her name was changed to Sarah, not Sarai. In addition to that, it's interesting to notice that, Rabbi Futner points out that the 26 times we say, Hodu Lashem Kitov Kiliolam Chazdo, are associated with the 26 generations of when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving to the world through Amira and not yet demanding absolute compliance, as was the case once there were the Aseres HaDibros. And those represent the 26 generations of what he calls Chesed Vitor, Chesed, given in a state of like Vatronus, of not really demanding in return. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week.